They tend to pass over those pages of 66, 67, Freedom from Anger. And they're powerful stuff. So we're going to be doing that next Saturday. Wednesday night, we're going to start There's a Solution. Tonight, we're going to finish To Wives. Any other things going on? To Wives, we are on page... Well, I wasn't sure, but we're going to start on page 116, and we will finish the chapter. And because the last time we did this, I clicked off the recording, so I can't remember what I did, but I covered a little bit of this. But I was studying this today, and you know, there's a lot of what are we actually trying to do in AA? Why do we come here? We want to change our lives, right? And we want to change the way we react, right? And how we live with the world. And in these few pages, there are some real powerful spiritual guidelines on living. And so we'll finish To Wives tonight, and then we're going to go right into Family afterwards, which also has powerful, powerful things on how we get along with the world. And when you look at the way it's written to wives, but it's really written to the alcoholic too, because the alcoholics don't live, most of us live in the world, and we're going to live around other people and in relationships, and we have to know how to live, right? So on page 116, it starts out, they're talking about a fear that the wife may have. It says, you may be afraid your husband will lose his position. You're thinking of the disgrace and hard times which befall you and the children. Now, the other thing I always point out, this was written in 1938. It was a different world then. There weren't divorce. People were poor. America was really recovering from the Depression, hadn't really recovered completely yet. A lot of people still out of work. Women were very dependent on their husbands. It was not a world like today. They were very dependent on their husbands for their livelihood, the place to live, their whole being. And so it says, this experience may come to you. So you may have a situation where your husband has consequences from his alcoholism. And should it happen again, regard in a different light. Now, we talk about this all the time. When things happen now, we see them differently. Maybe it will prove a blessing. And I think when people in here can talk about their own alcoholism, things that happened that we thought were pretty bad, like Stu in the jail, and you know, that wasn't really fun at 5 a.m, was it? But it got you here, and you know, 2 years later, and we all have had those things happen. At the time, we didn't see it, but it was the hand of God getting our attention. And it says it may convince your husband he wants to stop drinking forever. Now, in this book, they don't talk about just don't drink today. They're talking about drinking, stopping drinking forever. And it says, now you know that he could stop if he will. Well, how did they know that? Well, they knew it because people were sober. They wrote this book. And so it may convince your husband, and now you know that he could stop time after time. I love this. This apparent calamity has been a boon to us. And here's this line that I guess it's been in the book before, but I hadn't seen it. For it opened up a path which led to the discovery of God. And really, that's what we're really trying to do here. We're trying to open up a path to a relationship with God. Now, I thought about that when I was coming out of the car, and I said, now, every alcoholic in here has a path to God. But it's their path. And it hasn't worked. And they have a path here, the 12 steps, that works. So I have to give up my path. And, you know, people said, well, you need to get a relationship with God. So I said, okay, I'm going to do that. But I didn't know how to do that. And so, and it says, we have elsewhere remarked how much better life is when lived on a spiritual plane. If God can solve the age-old riddle of alcoholism, he can solve your problems too. And we talk about living a life on a spiritual plane in a different relationship with God, where we're serving God and others. God's our employer, right? We work for him, we do his work well and stay close to him, and he takes care of us. And they talk about, it says in the 12 and 12, if God can solve the problem of your drinking and keep you sober from drinking, then he can, why can't he solve all of your other character defects, right? And so there's really nothing that can't be solved by your relationship with God. And remember on page 45, it says, lack of power, that's our dilemma. We had to have a power to live. And then this book is how you find the power, and the power solves all my problems. I get into trouble today when I try to solve my problems. I have to remember, I'm not in the situation to solve my problems. I ask God how I react to them. How do I react? What do I do? It says, we wise found, now this is good, that like everybody else, we were afflicted with pride, self-pity, vanity, and all the things which go to make up the self-centered person. Well, everybody has self-centeredness. And everybody has character defects. Now, and it says, we were not above selfishness or dishonesty. Now, what's the problem? The difference between the alcoholic with their self-centeredness and the wife who has her self-centeredness is the alcoholic will drink over it and can't stop drinking. And then once he starts drinking, he can't stop, and then the cycles. The wife may just be miserable, but she doesn't have to take alcohol. We have to drink when we're in our self-centeredness. Anybody agree with that? And so we can't afford that, and that's why we're self-will run riot. And we're extreme examples. We're very proud of it, aren't we? I mean, we were the all pros of self-centeredness. And but they're self-centered too, and I see it a lot now. I've been going to Bible studies with people who are studying the scriptures, and they're not alcoholics, and they don't have the steps. And I hear their self-centered way, and then, and I'll say, well, you know, you need to look at this differently. I'll say some of the things, and they look at me like I'm Maharishi Yama, whatever it is, from the mountaintop. And it's like things have never occurred to them, like, you know, resentments are killing you. And they go, well, wow, where'd you hear that from? Because it's sad, but that's why this book was written. It's not written just for alcoholics. It was written for the world. And remember the 12th step, it says, carry this message. They change it to others, especially alcoholics. And so this is a design for living that works for all. And it follows all the scriptural principles outlined in the Bible on how to be the person God created, how to walk in the Spirit, with the Spirit, and be close to God and in contact with Him. And it says, as our husbands began to apply spiritual principles in their lives, we began to see the desirability of doing so. And why was it desirable? Why should they stay miserable? And you see, now they have tools to deal with their fear and their anger, right? And their resentment. And remember, it's a design for living for all. That's what the 12 steps are. A design for living that render the sufferer usefully whole. At first, some of us did not believe we needed this help. Does that sound like alcoholics? Yeah. We thought on the whole we were pretty good women, capable of being nicer if our husbands had stopped drinking. Now you can turn around. The alcoholic said if our wives had been nicer, we wouldn't have had to drink, right? You know, there's two sides to every story. It's like a divorce court. You wonder how these people ever married. But it was a silly idea that we were too good to need God. You know, that might be one of the things, it's a little line put in here, but a lot of people, you hear them, I don't want to hear about God. You've heard it a million times. They're dying. And maybe it's a silly idea that they don't need God. They're too good to need God, or it's a sign of weakness or something. It says, now we try to put spiritual principles to work in every department of our lives. Now, spiritual principles, if you don't put them in every part of your lives, it's not going to work. It has to be in all areas. You have to give God all areas of your life, remember? And every department. Now, how do you know if you're not giving God a certain department in your life? You're going to worry. You're going to have fear. You're not going to feel good. If you're managing any part of your life, you're setting yourself up for fear and resentment. And so that's how a barometer of my spiritual day is, am I getting into fear? If I'm getting disturbed about something? And then what am I trying to manage? When we do that, we find it solves our problems too. And look at this, the ensuing lack of fear, worry, and hurt feelings is a wonderful thing. It's one of the hidden promises in the big book. Lack of fear, worry, and hurt feelings. And my whole alcoholic life was described by fear, worry, and hurt feelings. Anybody else have that? In fact, that was our theme song. And it was always somebody else's fault. That's the interesting thing. If the new person comes in and you ask them why they have fear, worry, and hurt feelings, they'll give you a list of 10 people. But it was all because of me, right? And when I'm separated from God, I'm going to have fear, worry, and my feelings are going to get hurt. It says, we urge you to try our program. And remember, the program in the book is the program. It's not fellowship. So people say, I'm in the program. Going to meetings and fellowship is one thing. In the program means you're doing the steps in the book. And so you can't be in the program. You're either doing the program or you're not doing the program. You can be in the fellowship and not do the program. And a lot of people have done that, and it didn't work after a while. And they finally got into here. And some still don't do it. I don't know if they're happy or not. I'm not judging. But the program is the 12 steps. For nothing will be so helpful to your husband. Now, this is going to help your husband if I have a radically changed attitude towards him. So it's going to be helpful to him if I change my attitude towards him, which God will show me how to have. And guess who it's going to also help? Me. So don't we talk about that all the time? Then when we're upset, we have to change the way we see it. We have to change our attitude. Then I'm going to skip the next three paragraphs, and I'm going to go to 118. It's good stuff, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You and your husband will find that you can dispose of serious problems easier than you can the trivial ones. It's somewhere in the big book, but I can't remember the page. It says, alcoholics pole vault over mouse turds. Mm-hmm. Anyway, if you get the page, let me know. Yeah, we could take a mouse turd and we can make it the end of the world. In fact, an alcoholic, you know how you know you're an alcoholic? It has nothing to do with how much you drink. It's that you could sit in your chair and you could start to worry about something. And within 60 seconds, you're either out on the street, you lost your job, you're dead, your wife left you, right? It just happens. It's done. And you're sitting there, you said, holy mackerel, how'd that happen? I mean, that's the way we are. We laugh now, but we used to do it. Anybody else do that? Yeah, I don't do it anymore. It's such a waste of time. Next time you and he have a heated discussion, now this is really good, no matter what the subject, it should be the privilege of either of you to smile and say, and I'm going to write this down, I'm going to use this week. I'm going to say, this is getting serious. I'm sorry I got disturbed. Let's talk about it later. Isn't that great? I'm sorry I got disturbed. Let's talk about it later, because there's no point in discussing something when disturbed, right? It says, if your husband is trying to live on a spiritual basis, he will also be doing everything in his power to avoid disagreement or contention. And you know what I wrote here? Don't have a position. Don't have a position. Don't be entrenched in what I think the situation should be. Go to God and say, God, open my mind so I'm open-minded about what the situation should be. Now, this next paragraph has so much powerful spiritual information in it. It says, your husband knows he owes you more than sobriety. He wants to make good. We all want to make good when we come back, right? Yet you must not expect too much. His ways of thinking and doing are the habits of years. Now, Joe and Charlie make the point about steps 6 and 7, which we do every day for the rest of our lives, right? Well, you know, we have the spiritual checklist, right? Well, they make the point that my whole life I practiced being selfish and dishonest and frightened and inconsiderate and prideful. I was good at it. I was anger, right, resentment. We were good at it. And so to practice the other way, it takes time. And the way we do 6 and 7 is we stop this and we say, God, help me practice this way. And they make the point that the more you practice this way, you want to stop practicing this right away. Now, if anything defines my program today, it's that I don't want to be on the left-hand side at all. And I can recognize, because of my relationship with God, when I'm over there. I still get over there. But I can stop. And I can say, I don't want to be there. I don't want to stay disturbed. And I can get on the right-hand side where I may say the prayer, God, change how I see it. I'm full of fear. Give me courage. I'm angry. Let me forgive. turn my thoughts to others, I can help. It becomes almost automatic, so that if I'm disturbed, it's my fault. It's my fault if I'm staying separated from God. It's a powerful thing. And so we have to change, so people don't change overnight. And I've heard a lot of alcoholics come in, they go, I've been sober 60 days, and she's still beating on me and yelling at me. I mean, I'm going to meetings, I'm sober 60 days. You know, they don't understand, right? We were a tornado roaring through the lives of others. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to, things aren't going to change overnight. But I love this. Patience, tolerance, and understanding and love are the watchwords. We should underline that. We should hand that out. That's how God wants us to be. What's the vision of God's will that we must carry in every day, remember? It says we must carry it. Well, it's to be patient, tolerant, understanding, and loving. If I'm patient, tolerant, understanding, and loving, I'll bring God in every situation. And I'll react differently. I won't react the way I used to. And if I don't bring it in, it's not going to be there. So look at this next line. Show him these things in yourself. So if you bring this into any situation, they will be reflected back to you from him. I don't think there's two more powerful lines in the big book. Practice patience, tolerance, understanding, and love are the watchwords. And if I show these things in someone else, I bring them into a conversation or relationship, it's going to be reflected back to you. And let me tell you, when I bring anger, resentment, and fear to a relationship, it gets reflected back. Have any of you had an argument where things start to escalate real quickly? Well, yeah, you're both bringing your own anger, resentment, fear. And so you need to have a time out and bring love and tolerance. And so that's the other thing I've really learned. Try to bring God in every situation. I still remember that speaker, Hector. He says, the only thing lacking in any situation is the love I don't bring into it. I heard that and I went, wow. Because that's really true. And God is love. And if I bring God and love in every situation, I will react differently. And so if I'm not, then I know I can see it right away because things aren't going well. I don't like the way I see it. Live and let live is the rule. If you both show a remedy to a willingness to remedy your own defects, there will be little need to criticize each other. Anybody like that line? Now what I got out of that, it's I have to be willing to remedy my own defects, not their defects. And there will be little need to criticize each other, so I have to clean my side of the street. That's what they're telling me. I have to worry about me and how I'm reacting, not how they are. Because I have no control over that, right? I can't change them. So I really like that. Those two paragraphs on 118. Then they talked about women carry the picture of the ideal man. The chances are, it says, he will not be for like yourself. He's just beginning his development. Be patient. I wrote acceptance, and here's what I wrote, change your vision. Because if you have an expectation or vision of someone, and then you're setting yourself up for resentment. And then you're deciding really how they should be. And so I only should worry about how I am and how I be, and they'll be the way they are with their relationship with their Creator. Another feeling we are very likely to entertain is one of resentment that love and loyalty could not cure our husbands of alcoholism. We do not like the thought that the contents of a book or the work of another alcoholic has accomplished in a few weeks that for which we struggled for years. So the people who've lived with us, they're resentful that they couldn't fix us. And in a way, we understand that. It says, at such moments, we forget that alcoholism is illness over which we could not possibly have had any power. And here's the other thing. The alcoholic doesn't have any power over his alcoholism either, does he? The only thing he has the power to do is to surrender and give up. And I'm going to talk about surrender a little later. I had some new thoughts on it. Came to me in the airplane today. At such moments, we forget that alcohol is an illness over which we have no power. And then the husband will be the first to say that he wouldn't have been where he was without you. And it says, when resentful thoughts come, top of 119, this is another great line. Try to pause and count your blessings. Now, isn't that page 86? When we're 87, when we're agitated or doubtful, right, John? I quoted it wrong. I'm old. Close. I'm old. I'm on that medicine. It's affecting my mind. When we're agitated or doubtful, right, we pause. Powerful, and we ask God for the right thought or action. When we're resentful, comes, pause. Count your blessings. Be grateful. After all, your family is reunited. Alcohol is no longer a problem, and you and your husband working together toward an undreamed of future. And in fact, that's that line, when we put ourselves in God's hands, the things that happen when we look back are greater than anything that we could have predicted, right? Still not a difficulties, maybe jealous of the attention he bestows on other people, especially alcoholics. You've been starving for his companionship, yet he spends long hours helping other men and their families. Well, there should be a balance. We talk about that. You feel he should now be yours. We see that's a possessive thing. And like, now you should get all the attention, right? And well, who told you that? You see, you do. So you're setting yourself up for resentment. And alcoholics do that too. The fact is that he should work with other people to maintain his own sobriety. We talk about that all the time. Sometimes he will be so interested that he becomes really neglectful. That's where sponsorship helps, to give your sponsee balance so that you have to give time to all your relationships. He gets stirred up about their troubles, but not at all about yours. It will be little good if you point that out and urge more attention for yourself. We find it a real mistake to dampen his enthusiasm for alcoholic work. You know, it's true. You have somebody who's led a very self-centered life, right? And now they're trying to help other people and spread the message. And by doing so, they're actually helping them work the steps. I don't think we want to dampen that too much so that they'll pay more attention to you. You see why that would be self-centered, right? You need to have balance. We suggest that you direct some of your thought to the wives of his new alcoholic friends so you could work with them. They need the counsel and love of a woman who's gone through what you have. And isn't that what we do with the new alcoholic? We give our counsel and our love because we know what they have, what they're going through, right? It is probably true that you and your husband been living too much alone, for drinking many times isolates the wife of an alcoholic. Therefore, you probably need fresh interests and a great cause to live for as much as your husband. Now, what they're saying here is that wives have spent their whole lives time trying to fix the husband. So get over it. That's being done with AA. They're doing their program. You find another cause. You find another interest. And that works for the alcoholic so well. If you cooperate rather than complain, you will find that his excess enthusiasm will tone down. Both of you will awaken to a new sense of responsibility for others. And ask yourself, do you have a great cause? You know, as an alcoholic, what's your great cause? What are you doing? What is your great cause? And then that goes back to, who do you work for? Who's your employer? I used to think it was St. Francis, but it's God. And I work for God. And that's where the next line finds, you awaken to a new responsibility for others. Because what are we supposed to do in AA? Remember, our primary purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximal service to God and others. Mm-hmm. And when we're doing that, then we're going to be okay. And that can't be of service to God and others if I'm being hateful and angry and fearful, right? I have to be loving, tolerant, kind. You, as well as your husband, ought to think of what you can put into life instead of how much you can take out. Can't be better said, right? What can we give instead of what we get? It's a whole different way of living. That's what the spiritual life is all about. What you can get, and remember at night on page 86, right, John? 86. It says at night when we retire, we look at the day. Were we thinking of ourselves all day long? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, what we could pack into the stream of life? So at night we're supposed to inventory our day and see where we were. Were we back in self, or were we back in serving God? You will lose the old life to find a much better one. Anybody think that's a good idea? Perhaps your husband will make a fair start on the new basis. But just as things are going beautifully, he dismays you by coming home drunk. If you are satisfied he really wants to get over drinking, you need not be alarmed. Well, it is alarming, because it's scary. Though it is infinitely better that he have no relapse at all, has been true with many of our men, is by no means a bad thing in some cases. Now here's why, and this relates back to the story of Jim on page 35. Your husband will see at once that he must redouble his spiritual activities if he expects to survive. And then I wrote here, true hitting bottom. When do you truly hit bottom? And you see that you're powerless to fix this thing. Then on your own, there's no hope for you, and you seek help, and you seek God. You see, when is that moment? And it may be that it takes drinking more booze. He must redouble his spiritual activities if he expects to survive. And it doesn't say go to meetings, you know. It's spiritual activities, prayer, meditation, inventory, working with others. You need not remind him of his spiritual deficiency. He will know it. Now, I think that's when you know your spiritual deficiency is when you understand that of yourself, you have no power to fix this thing. Anybody else have that moment when they realized that they had no power to fix this thing? And that was a kind of relief, because then I could give up, and then I could turn it to someone else to help fix it. Cheer him up and ask him how you can be still more helpful. The slightest sign of fear or intolerance may lessen your husband's chance of recovery. In a weak moment, he may take your dislike of his high-stepping friends as one of those insanely trivial excuses to drink. Well, you know, there's no way you can avoid an alcoholic's insanely trivial excuses to drink. But what they're saying is love and tolerance. And then give them to God. Their fear, if you're living in fear, you're just trying to control and fix this thing. You have no power. Just give your thoughts to God, how you can be helpful to him, and how God can be helpful to him. It says, we may never try to arrange a man's life so as to shield him from temptation. Well, we've heard all about that. You know, changing where you live, changing situations. The slightest, that won't work. The slightest disposition on your part to guide his appointments or his affairs so he will not be tempted will be noticed. Make him feel absolutely free to come and go as he likes. This is important. If he gets drunk, don't blame yourself. God has either removed your husband's liquor problem or he has not. Sometimes we sponsor, we feel bad when our sponsees, we don't see him for a while. That's normal. We care about people, but we didn't have the power to fix him one way or the other, but all we had the power to do was to help guide him and be there for him and in any way we could. But we don't have the power to keep anybody from drinking. Then you and your husband can get right down to fundamentals. If a repetition is to be prevented, and I love this, place the problems along with everything else in God's hands. That's the whole deal for AA. Everything goes to God. Put everything in God's hands, and then we have to do what God wants us to do in each situation. And I wrote, God solves my problems, not me. And so it ends, we realize that we've been giving you much direction and advice. We may have seemed to lecture. If that is so, we are sorry. For we ourselves don't always care for people who lecture us, of course. But what we have related is based upon experience, and some of it painful. And a lot of alcoholics don't like to read the big book. But it's their experience, and it is painful to read. But it's true, you can't argue with someone's experience. And I wrote, experience is the observing, encountering, and undergoing of things generally as they occur over time. Knowledge or practical wisdom gained for what has been observed or undergone. And so this book is their testimony, their experience. You can't argue with it. It's their experience. They're not asking you whether you like it or not. They're just telling you their experience. And if you have the same problem they have, then you'll want to do what they did or not. And they leave it up to you. We had to learn these things the hard way. That is why we were anxious that you understand and that you avoid these unnecessary difficulties. So to you out there who may soon be with us, we say good luck and God bless you. And, you know, I was just thinking that, you know, with your sponsees, it might be good to sit down with them and their significant other and read this chapter together. You know, read it with your sponsee first. But it might be something, you know, or if people are going for counseling or something, that they read this chapter. It's got a lot of powerful information. So I don't know, I got a lot out of it, and we'll open it up, and next week we'll read family afterwards. Thank you.